All right, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are so happy, so pleased and excited to welcome Adeola Whitney. She is the CEO of Reading Partners, which is a national nonprofit that mobilizes communities to provide students with the proven individualized reading support they need to read at grade level by fourth grade. Adeola Whitney, thank you so much for joining us on Ed's Not Dead.
Thank you, Casey. Thank you, Peter. I'm excited to be here with both of you today.
Yeah,
just excited to talk.
Let's talk about reading.
Let's talk about reading.
Let's do it.
So let's start with your organization, which is Reading Partners. And as I was, you know, we're working on these interview questions, we found out that one of your main goals is to get students to read at grade level by fourth grade. So Crable and I don't have a lot of experience in that. We're middle and high school people.
Okay.
And if Robbie were here, he'd have a lot of opinions to say, because he's born and bred elementary. But for our listeners who may not be attuned to the elementary level, why is it so important for students to learn to read by such a specific grade level?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Casey. You know, first and foremost, I'll just say right now in this country, I believe the number is 79% of this country's fourth graders experiencing economic disadvantages aren't reading at grade level.
Right,
and
right.
You all know, while you may not be rooted in or steeped in elementary school and working with children of that age, you said that you work with middle school and high school students. Mm-hmm. And you know how hard it is when you have a middle schooler or a high school student who's struggling with reading.
Yes.
The reason that we so believe, and that there's research and a lot of data and books and articles that have been written on the importance of this, is that if you're not getting a child up to speed in reading by the time they're in fourth grade, the chances of them graduating on time, attaining any type of post-secondary certification, degree, any of that those chances are so much more slim. And I know that on a previous podcast, you all were speaking with one of your guests about the science of reading, which is what our curriculum is also based on.
I debated bringing that up to you, yeah.
I was just going to say, it's so important. I think it's really critical to identify the skill gaps and really help create targeted support to kids with specific areas that they're struggling in reading. And that's what we try to do in partnership with schools.
So let's talk a little bit more about the specifics of your approach and how the organization works. So you work with schools and parents, and that's an important part of, I guess, the triad. So tell us how you work with schools and families to get students to read at grade level. Like, what does it look like on the ground? What does it look like in a school?
Yep.
And walk us through so we can picture how it all works.
Yeah. So we work with kids. So the schools identify, the teachers and reading specialists will identify the children we work with who are at least half a grade level behind in reading, up to 2.5 grade levels behind in reading. And then when they come to us, which is like another classroom, we just call it a reading center, looks like an elementary school library, but just a fraction of the size. There are tables all around the room, really nice and colorful, pictures and books. And at every table is a student and the tutor, because we mobilize our community to recruit volunteers to tutor with us once or twice a week. And so we bring the student in, we assess them to really understand what exactly are they struggling with in reading. We provide then a very specific lesson plan for them. And then all of that is scripted for the tutor. So the tutor does not have to have been a teacher, doesn't have to be a literacy expert or an expert in elementary education, but rather know how to read, have the propensity and love and desire to work with kids, and of course not have a criminal background. So we pair them, they take the lesson plan, and then it's about a 45-minute lesson. The tutor is first preparing, and then they read, then there's a read aloud, there's a specific skill. So let's say it's phonemic awareness or learning a certain sound or a blend that they practice on, that they practice with the child on, and then the child gets to do some not independent, but guided reading with them. And then the idea is that we're also building their love of reading, not just the skill. So at the end of the lesson, we encourage them to take a book home. So we have a number of books in our reading center that they get to take home. We recognize that we are so not the panacea. I think far too often, and I say this as someone who's worked in a lot of nonprofits. I'm not a teacher or an instructional leader by by, you know, my background or my experience, but I've worked in a number of educational nonprofits. And I think far too often, especially in disadvantaged communities, there is this like all-knowing sense that these nonprofits have coming into schools like, oh, we have the answer for you.
Right.
And it isn't that. I mean, like, we're not doing this work to a community or for a community. We should be doing this work with a community. And so to do it with a community, we need to partner with teachers. We need to partner with school leaders and recognize they're the ones working with these youngsters all day, 5 days right. a week. And we're just there a couple hours. So just that partnership is important. It can't be like we're on top of something additive to what they're doing, but we should be a part of that child's journey. And then, of course, I can talk more about how we engage families, but I realized that was a little long-winded. So
No, I was just going to ask about the more details of the relationship, and that's exactly what I was asking about. Is so, you know, they're working with students, and maybe the more nitty-gritty aspect of it is, so to what extent are you training these tutors, these folks that are working with students? To it almost seems like you have to build in those. How do you build relationships with students? Like they're building a relationship with the student, it seems.
That's right. So before, I mean, so we first recruit all of our mentors. We talk to them about what it is that we're trying to do. And we hope that the people we're recruiting also have a belief in students and in the importance of reading. I would say the majority of the tutors we find, the volunteers, love reading. They're avid readers themselves. And so the idea that so many children in this country are struggling with reading, I think is the very reason that they decide to partner with us. We do a series of, we do like about a 2 hour long orientation where we're helping them understand a little bit about the science of reading, not for them to be experts in that, but just to understand our curriculum, our approach, what happens before we pair them with the student, and then the type of ongoing coaching and support we provide. And so there is always someone in our reading center, an AmeriCorps member and a Reading Partners staff member, who are there guiding the tutor, coaching them, giving them tips while they're there. So there's a lot of ongoing training that they provide, right. that we provide too. To all of the tutors.
So a lot of the early literacy strategies is pretty new to me. And so I have two now elementary aged kids in my house. So kindergarten and second grade. So I've most of my experience is coming through watching them, and especially over the last year as I've seen the videos. But I would be remiss if I didn't put on my Robbie Dodd hat here. And he was trained as a whole language specialist, whole language mm-hmm. reading instructor.
Yep.
And it seems that the main sticking point of like phonics versus whole language has to do with developing the love of reading and the content and some of the knowledge that you can get from reading, you know, a book aside from like See Dick and Jane Run, you
mm-hmm.
know. So my question is, you know, amongst, and I will say that seeing my own kids go through it in the phonics specifically, I certainly am like, oh, that seems to make sense to me. But how do you avoid the sort of like drill and kill that it seems could happen with an overemphasis on phonics? Like, how do you also emphasize content and like develop what we all want for kids, which is that lifelong love of reading and reading for information and reading because they like it or a great story or whatever it is?
Well, I think the power of what we do, and I would argue this is probably similar to what great teachers do too, is that it's a combination of both the academics, but also social and emotional learning. So within our curriculum, social emotional learning is embedded, and it's a big part of even the connection that the tutor is making with the student. So a big part, I tell my own children, I have a son right in the middle of the age of your two kids in first grade. And, you know, I tell him and his older brothers the same thing, that when people cannot do something, it's one of three reasons. They lack the skill, they lack the will, or both, right? And so it's not enough for us to simply fill a skill gap by doing rote, you know, just this rote drilling. That's not appealing to a kindergartner, but it's also important for us to ensure that they're excited about it. And that includes reading books to them where we're able to ensure that there are characters that they identify with. 90% of the kids that we serve are Black and Brown children. And so it's important for us to ensure that the books that they're reading are also very diverse, or the books that we are also reading to them. And so that's one of our approaches. We also give high fives and talk about their resilience. And I know there was, in one of the earlier podcasts you all did, it must have been the podcast after you interviewed Zaretta Hammond, and mm-hmm. you were referring back to that podcast, which I have not heard yet. But,
oh, you need to, that's a good one.
Yeah, but in that one, I actually started listening to it right before this, and I ran out.
Oh, nice.
But in that, you reference, in that podcast where you reference that podcast, you reference something that she said about just having this asset-based way to think about our kids, and especially Black and Brown children from disadvantaged communities, and this time during COVID. To that extent, I mean, our kids are resilient, right? And the fact that kids are learning anything right now, and also the fact that teachers are able to teach anything right now. Kids didn't go to school to learn this way. Teachers didn't go to school or get certified to teach this way. And so the fact that the teachers are able to teach something, kids are able to learn something, that in itself should be celebrated. And so I think a lot of what we are thinking about, especially in the fall and as we return to the classrooms, or we return to like our traditional model of teaching kids, is just really ensuring that we elevate the resiliency of kids and just how amazing they are, and talking about that as we're building connections with them to help them read. We just think that goes a long way. And then our Take Reading Home program, where mm-hmm. we're really trying to build their home libraries and allowing students to decide and have some agency in what books they pick and why, and talk to us about that. You know, what looks interesting about this book? Right. I think those are ways that we nurture all of the ways that we try to, you know, help kids love reading and build a passion for it.
So I'm glad you brought that up about the about bringing in different books, diverse sets of books. And I was thinking about this as I was looking through the Reading Partners website and looking at their board of directors. Oftentimes we have, we'll be looking at guests to come on, and we look at their foundation, and the directors are, it's an entirely white panel of folks who are, education reform in high need schools or what have you. The Reading Partners to me seems like they have a fairly diverse set of board of directors, folks on your staff. Like how do you see, how do you weave that thread through everything that you're doing in terms of building cultural competence in the folks that are working with our children? What kind of tools are you having these tutors use? And how do you see that thread of equity, move it through your organization?
Yeah, Casey, I love that question. I think when I think about where I want us to be in 5 or 10 years, I want us to be at the center of this nationwide movement around educational equity. So I talk about educational equity all the time. And the fact is, while a lot of us love reading, that's not why we're here. We're here because there's a systemic problem that we're trying our best to undo. And it's going to take more than Reading Partners and more than public education, but it takes all of us, right? Even the community. And that's why we're attacking it this way. But it is important to us to ensure that any person who's coming into the children's lives that we so wish to support are not causing harm, either unintentional or intentional. And
intent versus impact, it doesn't matter.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we were just talking about that today within our organization. So there's a ton of work that we're doing internally on race, equity, diversity, and inclusion work, which we call READY. And while our board is becoming more diverse, and our leadership is becoming more diverse, and our staff and our AmeriCorps members are becoming more diverse, we're not where we need to be.
Right.
And like, it's important to have people who look different than our students, and it's important to have more leaders who identify with the experiences that our students identify with. And I think that's a way to really create an inclusive organization. And so we're on our own journey as an organization around race, equity, diversity, and inclusion. We're creating a foundation of language. We're doing training at the board level, at the leadership level. We've created affinity groups. We've put money behind this work, and not just, ooh, we're going to see if we could get some free training, but actually putting money where our mouth is. And then I think what happened last spring, right after George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor were killed, and right before Juneteenth, was that a lot of companies nonprofits, institutions were all putting very performative messages on their websites because that was the thing to do. It's like you kind of couldn't. But you know, let's fast forward now, a year from now, what are folks doing? And I have a mission as well as my board and the rest of the organization to ensure what we put up on our website a year ago wasn't in vain and wasn't performative. And so to live into that, there's a lot of work we have to do.
Right.
And so we're doing that work. And then there's a lot of work we need to do with our tutors. And I think what's hard is that the majority of our tutors do not represent the students that we serve.
Right. And teachers as well. I mean, our teachers, largely a white working teaching force.
That's right. And I think while it's important to have tutors that look differently than our students, because I think there's some beauty in the cross-cultural connection that is made, it's also important for them to see people who look like them. So like, I think both can be true. And a big piece that we are trying to focus on is cultural attunement. And what does that look like? And I feel like it's been somewhat scaffolded for us. So this year we talked a little bit about systemic racism to our tutors. We began to introduce that in our orientation. And I think next year we want to do even more with just helping them understand it's not always about the intention. It's about the impact and just what our responsibility is to do for our students and not to assume. I remember once, a long time ago. So I just came back to Reading Partners.
I saw that,
But I was here before in 2013 to 2016. And I remember a tutor, very well-intentioned, great guy. But he said to me, you know, I do this because I want these kids to be loved. And I know that they just don't receive love. And I said, let me explain something to you. It's not love that they lack. It's resources. And that idea that you believe that you need to give them love that they don't actually have is just ignorant. And I'm here.
The white savior complex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's not what this is about. So I think it's our job to help our tutors understand that. And I think unfortunately we'll turn some people away. I know that will happen, but if we're turning them away because they were then going to, you know, perhaps inflict some harm on our students, then it's the right decision.
Right.
So one of the things I think that is so important, and you talk about how there is no magic answer.
Right.
And you alluded, you know, probably because companies make money this way. They're like, we are the answer. so I guess the sort of last piece of the triangle has to do with, you know, at home parents.
Yeah.
And what they can do. And I'm an educator, and I know that I have felt at times like, I don't really know how to support like my six-year-old to learn to read. I can read with them. I can read to them. I can have them read to me. I can listen, watch a video. But what do you recommend for parents that want to be there and want to support their kids but don't know how?
That's such a great question. And I'm not going to pretend that I have all the answers because, I mean, I literally have conversations with my first grader's teacher all the time about this with him. He doesn't love reading, he's reading. And I try to do many things that we tell our families in our program to do, and some of them work and some of them do not. But I think first and foremost, it's just about being informed about what it is that's happening at school. And I think that that's a two-way street. I think it's a teacher's job, especially when kids are very young, but for them to help parents and families, caregivers understand how that child is performing in school. I think that's important. So just that knowledge of understanding, how is my child doing in reading?
Yeah.
And then perhaps from the teacher getting a couple tips. I think what we do is like, the biggest thing is we want to let you know what they're working on. There's a certain letter that they're working on, if we're working on certain words, or they're reading certain types of books. We want to send those books home. We want to contact our families and give them a sense of how they are doing. This has been actually easier for us during the pandemic because we now kind of have a window into home, because now our program has all has pivoted online. Mm-hmm. So we're now talking to families much more than we ever did before. I don't think we built, if I'm just being honest, I don't think the 22 years of the history of our program was built to really be great at family engagement. We have a ways to go. We started some things last year. We're doing more. Some of it is just surveying parents and understanding how can we help? Like, we don't know if they're working from home or working outside of the home, but what would be helpful? So we have e-licenses, e-book licenses that can be utilized on a cell phone or on a computer, you know, just to help kind of mitigate the digital divide. So we encourage families to do that. And then we also just text home some resources in conjunction with what the kids are working on in our reading center. So those are some of the things that we do. Yeah. And then, of course, keeping in communication with the teacher.
Yeah, one thing I want to make sure all our listeners know about is the Imagination Library. I think Dolly Parton runs it or funds it or something. But yeah, they send a book to your kid once a month from like birth until five, I think, like that. I mean, it's just an incredible way to have books in your home, you know what I mean? And you know, theoretically, I'd love to go to the library every weekend, but that does not happen. So,
that's right.
You know, we have all these books, yeah, that, you know, have just like built up. It's amazing just having books in the home, even if our two-year-old just is looking at them. You know, learning how books work is a pretty incredible thing.
The last question we have for you before we go on to our guest quiz is what's next for Reading Partners? What's coming up for your organization that we should let our listeners know about?
Yeah, I'd maybe answer that in two different ways. First and foremost, in this country, there are over 10 million children, elementary age, that are struggling with reading. And I would imagine that number is only bigger given the last year. And while we have served at a height, like maybe 11,000 students, I truly believe that there's no time like the present. And Reading Partners over the next 3 years needs to exponentially serve even more students. And mm-hmm. through the pandemic, we've pivoted to a digital programming model to support under-resourced families and schools. And our goal is to continue to do that while also returning to our bricks and mortar model. So we're looking to continue to support schools, but also look at ways to partner with nonprofit organizations and also perhaps find ways to help students out of school time. So right. we're going to be trying some pilots over the next year, see what sticks, and then kind of move forward there.
That's exciting. That's very awesome. Well, Adeola, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we have to, this is an education podcast, so we have to end our time with some sort of assessment, some sort of accountability measure. So it's been great having you on the pod, but now it's time for our infamous guest quiz.
Okay. What if I don't do well?
You're going to do great.
Okay.
I believe in you.
Okay. Thank you.
As the CEO of Reading Partners, we know you know your stuff when it comes to teaching and leading reading programs, but we want to know what you know about the age-old show Reading Rainbow, hosted by the great LeVar Burton from way back. You ready?
So what do I know about it? I know the song. I know LeVar Burton. I know that
That's
it was
right.
my younger sister's favorite show.
Well, then
you're going to start the quiz?
Is that yes. If you answer two out of the three questions, you win. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Number one, when Reading Rainbow ended its 26-year run, it was the third longest-running children's show in PBS history. Which two other shows beat Reading Rainbow as the longest-running children's show on PBS? You have three chances to get them right.
Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
You got it. You got it.
I saw Sesame Street is on like season 53 or something like that.
Is it now on HBO or something?
Yeah. So it's like go to seasons and it's like season one, season 53. It's like,
that's so great.
It's going to take a long time to binge that. Number two, why did Reading Rainbow end in 2009? This is multiple choice.
Okay.
A, LeVar Burton is a notoriously difficult actor to handle and work with, and PBS just decided they had had enough. B, no one wanted to cough up what amounted to nearly $500,000 to renew the broadcast rights. Or C, No Child Left Behind basically solved our reading issues in the U.S., so there was no need for the show.
B
is correct. No one wanted to cough up the money.
You said $500,000?
$500,000.
Oh my, that's it?
That's it. Number three, and this is the last one. You're doing great. Number three, speaking of No Child Left Behind, the infamous and controversial 2001 education law also played a part in the canceling of the show. How so? Is it A, George W. Bush wasn't really big on quote-unquote reading and pushed for it to be canceled? B, the GOP cut funding from PBS as they are wont to do? Or C, NCLB was a shift from fostering a love of reading to teaching kids how to read via federal policy?
Oh, this is... kind of hard. I know it's not A. I'm torn between B and C. I'm going to say C.
C is correct.
Oh, good.
When asked about the reasons, in an interview with Rolling Stone, Burton said that, quote, "We were a victim of No Child Left Behind, and we have never been about the rudiments of reading, so we were left on the minus side of that equation." Wow. So you got 3 out of 3.
Three out of three. Very nice.
That was like fun.
That's like top guest score for our quiz here.
Yeah.
I love the quiz. Thank you.
So before we let you out of here, tell us social media, website, all that good stuff, where our listeners can find you.
Yes. So Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, we're Reading Partners. Website, www.readingpartners.org. And what else? I have an Instagram. I have a Reading Partners Instagram at RPCEOLA. Don't have a lot of followers at all. Our regular Reading Partners one has more. And I just repost a lot of the great content that
you all need to get on TikTok. That's the next thing.
I know.
That's
right?
Casey's thing. Yeah.
No, I got off of it early on in the pandemic. I was on it for about a month, and the algorithms were just way too good. And I'm like, I have to get off of this phone. It was terrible.
Goodness.
Well, Adeola, Whitney, thank you so much for joining us. It was really a pleasure having you on, and hopefully we can get you back on when Robbie's back, because he'll have a lot of questions for you too.
I would love that. Well, thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation. I hope you two have a great rest of your evening.
All right.
Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. All right. Bye.
Bye.